And welcome back to Paulistic Behind the Curtain. We're going to shift gears a little bit to the world of comedy and the incredible Annoyance Theater, which is here in Chicago on Belmont. And every weekend, you can go see an amazing show there called Hitch Cocktails. Yeah, Hitch Cocktails. It does involve some drinking and a lot of comedy. And let me introduce you to the guest joining me now. The executive director of High Stakes Production, who makes Hitch Cocktails happen, is Bruce Phillips. And what a talent he is. Bruce, so glad you are with me.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having us on, Paul.
And other cast members join us as well. Bree Fitzpatrick, originally from Seattle, Washington, by the way. That's cool. You probably like started in Teatro Zanzani when it started out there at some point in the past.
I did. I was three and I did start Teatro Zanzani.
As an acrobat or something like that?
Yeah. Little baby acrobat.
Okay, so maybe that's not true, but there is something true about you, and that is that you like started the first like university-based improv group in Ireland?
I did. I went to college in Dublin, Ireland, Trinity College, and improv wasn't as much of a mainstay of the university world as it is here in the States, and so I decided to do that. We started a group called Improv She Wrote, and it's still around.
You know, the only thing more impressive, I think, than learning in Ireland would be to grow up in Okemos, Michigan. Or Okemos, I don't know, Simon Tesmer, who joins us, a writer and improviser. Your reaction shows that I wasn't saying it right. So what town did you grow up in?
You were so close. Okemos, Michigan is the name of the town. You got it on the second try.
Okay. We'll probably edit that and make it correct from the get-go. I'm so glad you joined us because I'm not going to lie to anybody else, but I really wanted you in this show because the character you play in this, or at least the night I saw it, was just so amazing, so funny. I've never seen anybody have so much fun with a hat. I'm not sure what was supposed to happen and what wasn't, but your hat alone gave me hope for the future. And Edgar Navarez, a writer, a performer, film, theater, all this sort of stuff, which is great. And you actually, I love this about you, Edgar. You received the 2021 NBC Second City Bob Curry Fellowship. I always go to the Bob Curry shows at Second City. Congratulations on that. That means lots of training for you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, that's actually probably one of the things I'm like most proud of having received. It's such a cool program, and I stay very much in contact with like everyone that I've done it with. And then just because once you're like part of that family, I also go back now and watch it every single year. And like, it's just a really, really fun program.
Oh yeah. And I love the fact because they will look in the audience and you see all the former Bob Curry winners are sort of there and enjoying it. Except for me, I'm just waving. Bruce, let me come to you because since you are the executive director, I saw this show on a Saturday night. I should say that right now it is called Summer of Suspense at the Annoyance Theater. And so the version that people are seeing now, and by the way, Annoyance is at 851 West Belmont. Couldn't be more convenient, maybe not the parking, but it couldn't be more convenient for getting there. But Hitch Cocktails, the Summer of Suspense, there's the version playing now, but then the Hitch Cocktails doesn't go away. Fill us in.
That's right. So we've been running over 12 years now at the Annoyance Theater. Hitch Cocktails is every Friday at 9:30, and that's been going on all summer. And then we wanted to do something special for the summer. The show, I mean, you can imagine after 12 years, it's always improvised, but we wanted to give it a little bit even more love. We had some new cast members that have joined the cast. The show hadn't been updated in a while, like tech-wise, rehearsal-wise. So we spent the last few months leading up to the summer really doubling down on our cast, really rehearsing really strongly. We updated a lot of tech. This upcoming weekend, we're going to be unveiling our new bar. So we've got a brand new bar with all kinds of bells and whistles happening on it. And we just really wanted to make it very special. And one way that we thought we'd celebrate is in July, we wanted to add these Saturday shows that you came to see. So we tour this show as well. We go to festivals, we go to things around. And usually festivals don't want a two-act show with intermission. So we developed a Hitch Cocktails Presents, like an Alfred Hitchcock Presents. That's just 55 minutes, an hour long show. Yeah, so it's the same amount of drinking, the same amount of suspense in a very short amount of time.
So you say that, of course, the audience is who is watching us going, oh, I see. So there must be a bar in the theater. There is. And oh, I'll bet I can go get a drink. Yes, you can. And maybe there's even a drinking game for people in the audience. Yes, there is. So there's that sort of fun. But Bree, I noticed as Bruce was filling us in and he started talking about the bar, you began drinking. So fill us in a little bit. You actually, you look so fabulous. You're like ready for a cocktail party.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, everything that we perform is done in the era of the Hitchcock films. So any given night, you'll see a story take place somewhere between the mid-1930s and the mid-1960s. And we really, yeah, we do it up. We dress up to the nines. And then, of course, there is a drinking element to our show. So not
and
only...
And it's not the audience you're talking about.
No, the audience does have a drinking game that they can play along with us. Mostly what you're looking for, we spell it out for you and we give you the rules beforehand. But you're looking for wordplay. You're looking for things like puns or if we drop a Hitchcock film title. And you are looking for violence. So if somebody is shaken, if somebody is murdered, if somebody screams, if somebody pulls out a weapon, then you take a drink in the audience. But we on stage have our own drinking game that's a little bit different. We do have a full bar on stage. Like Bruce mentioned, we're going to have it revealed. It's been totally zhuzhed up, revamped by our production designer, Allie, and it will be revealed next weekend, this coming weekend. And it is fully stocked with lots of different goodies, lots of different baddies sometimes too. And if one player offers the other a drink during the show at any point, that actor must accept said drink and they must finish said drink before the scene finishes. And the scene finishes depending on when our technical director decides to call lights. So we never know quite how quickly we might have to finish that drink. But we always say that the plot will become more complicated one way or the other.
And because you are very aware, Simon, that the audience probably thinks they're not really drinking, you actually have somebody in the audience at the beginning of the show test it and confirm for you that, yeah, what you guys are drinking, there is alcohol in there.
That is true. Yes, it's a common axiom that theater is based on lies. But in this case, theater is based on truth. And the truth is that those pictures you see on stage are spiked with alcohol. And we do test it on over 21 audience volunteers so they can prove to the rest of the audience that, yes, we are drinking real alcohol. We are genuinely getting quite drunk by the end of the show.
So, and I'm sure your parents are proud. And so... But what you do, this is improv. You guys do improv. And so I'm guessing, Edgar, there's some structure to the show, obviously. You can't be blind in terms of what you're going to do. But I will say this. One of the things you ask for from the audience at the get-go is for a phobia, a fear. And you let us know. You don't want it to be something that would just be so common. We hear it all the time. The night that I saw the show, somebody yelled out velvet, which I thought was brilliant because who would be afraid of velvet? I don't know if you met that audience member afterwards. I wonder if she really was afraid of velvet. But that being point, Edgar, how do you, once you hear that word, what do you do with it? And can you share just some other words that have come up that maybe you look at each other and go, oh my goodness, what are we doing with this one?
Sure. So once we get that word, it's kind of like, it's almost like a ticking clock because what we're trying to do on stage is someone has to come up with the title of the movie. And so we're all kind of racking our brains probably for velvet or velvet adjacent like puns and try to figure out any sort of catchy title that would work for our film that night. After that, you're also looking for puns because if you don't get out for the title, you might be in charge of doing the tagline. So the tagline is essentially like a little log line, something you would see as like a one sentence, two sentence description of any movie. The person who gives out that tagline also kind of begins, I guess, starts giving the rest of the cast the structure for what the show is going to be. So as Bruce said, we're very rehearsed and we're very well studied on a lot of things Alfred Hitchcock. That means that, like, you know, our directors have kind of, like, structured out a couple of different, like, for lack of a better word, types of Alfred Hitchcock movies that we could do. And so certain keywords in that log line will actually kind of tell the cast, like, oh, today we're doing like a psycho killer, or today we're doing like someone's accused of murder and no one believes them, or today someone's trying to plot the perfect murder. And so once we're in those storylines, it does become a little bit more structured, in the sense that, like, you know, obviously if you're in a psycho killer, the name of the game, it becomes, we got to figure out, we got to start killing. Someone has to be killing, and someone has to be like, we got to make our killer kind of one of our main characters. Whereas if we're in like plotting a perfect murder, you might never even see a murder. It might be more about the tension of like planning it, and where will it go right, will it go wrong, kind of setting that trap.
But are those decisions happening at the moment, or do you know before you get on stage what you're doing that night?
They happen in the moment. There's maybe small talk backstage of like, hey guys, we're almost at intermission and we're in a psycho killer and no one's been killed. Like, someone step up and kill.
Oh, he's got to do something.
Well,
I think one of the, I'll say that. Look, I think one of the very interesting things about the show is that there is there's structure in the sense that we know the tropes and archetypes that fall into a psycho show versus a perfect murder, but there is not a structure in, well, we've done this scene, so now we're going to do this scene, or by the third scene, we need to have the villain out. Like, we have no structure, and there's a lot of narrative genre shows out there that serves them very well to say that, like, well, in act one, we see this, and in scene two, we see this. And Hitchcock Tales, we just never went that way. We are truly completely improvised. We don't know who's going to be killed. We don't know who the murderer is going to be. We don't know what's going to happen before we get to intermission, or how the show is going to wrap up. It is all improvised.
I love it. By the way, Bruce, let me just clarify. Now there's a Friday night show, which is around 90 minutes, 2 hours, and a 1 hour version on Saturday. After August 30th, we just shift to back to the 2 hour show.
Yes, we'll be Fridays at 9:30. It's about 100 minutes with intermission.
Okay. And Simon, let me come to you, because the night that I was there, your name kind of changed as the show went on. You got referenced as being the everything boy. I mean, how much of this stuff are you? And I just the way you play off these things, I just got such a kick out of and stuff. Was this, were you like, yeah, I know that's coming. I know that's going to happen. Or are you going like, what did they just do? And now you got to deal with it.
That's a really interesting question, Paul. I think, the answer is I don't know what my castmates are about to do. And, rightfully so, it's an improvised show, so that's all totally outside of my control. And the fun of doing this show and of doing any improv show, as I see it, is being radically accepting of whatever happens in front of me, and doing my best to make my cast look good. So nothing they're saying is wrong. How best can I justify and help what they're saying? And doing a show like Hitchcock Tales, with a cast that's so unbelievably strong, that job is very fun and very easy. So if anything, with the kind of stuff you're referencing, Paul, it's more like we're being playful with each other, I think, and just... getting our kicks in where we can, having fun with each other in front of the audience.
So it sounds
the alcohol,
like
alcohol definitely helps that along.
Yes.
and also I think we're so studied up and well-versed in the tropes and archetypes, that's a really fun way to, even when things do go totally left and we surprise our castmates or ourselves with what comes out of our mouths, we're always coming back to this place of, oh, but I'm playing the icy blonde and the icy blonde would react this way, or I am the Norman, I am a psycho and this is my trigger. So it comes back to these very cool archetypes and grounded emotional reactions.
And so it sounds like what you're also doing is, see my knowledge of improv, it's the yes and, right? Whatever you're thrown, you don't sort of deny it. You go with yes and let's take it to the next step. Bree, let me stay with you on that, because you just, and by the way, even as I said, just even in your appearance now, you would totally be out of that 30s, 40s, 50s Hitchcock person. I can totally see it. and doing that. But so how much are you in your character when you're in this show versus having an internal dialogue with yourself about what you as an improv actor need to be doing and thinking about next, or what's coming up? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, it does. I think it's probably different from actor to actor. I will say I can't kind of imagine it as spinning plates a lot of the time because I was in Teatro Zanzani and with Baby Acrobat,
The
and
acrobatic major
so
too,
it's
yeah.
just this idea, yeah, of like you've got what is really fun about playing this show is that right from jump you can like glom onto a character archetype and say, oh, I'm playing the good girl gone bad tonight. Okay, great. I've already got a little bit of framework for myself or a little bit of a pathway that no matter what happens, I can follow. And also there's going to be more executive parts of your brain going and make sure that like this plot makes some sense. But it all comes together and I think no matter what, we always get there. And the fun is seeing if we can get there. It's that little bit of the tightrope walk with all the plates. And the
Well, by
audience
the way, Bree,
watching
just
us get drunker and drunker, maybe the plot even get like more and more off the rails. And then we steer the ship home and it's
and you
great
bet. In
college
fact, I want to.
celebration.
Edgar, I'm going to come to you in just a second, but Bruce, let me ask you. So, what I did notice is, the show that I saw on Saturday night was, meant to be an hour or so. I mean, you were like right on time. Who there is sort of making sure things are moving at a pace? Because I'm guessing it ends on time every night. You got to get there.
It speaks a lot, I think, to the experience of our actors. Like, I've been doing the show so long, over a decade, where I know when we've hit that intermission point in the regular show. It's really kind of ingrained in me. We do have a clock backstage to help us like really keep track in case we are getting a little off the rails. We're like, where are we? It's also the light booths person job. They're calling scenes on things. That's another thing that's sort of out of our control. If you see a lot of improv, you'll notice the actors do a thing called a sweep. They'll sort of like run across the stage to edit. They're in charge of their own edits. We put our edits because we are mimicking cinema. We're putting all of our edits in the hand of the light booth person. So that's usually Christian Pitch, a wonderful performer at the Second
Rhymes
City.
with Hitch.
At Hitch, out at the Annoyance at his own right. But he does a lot of our lights, and we're relying on him to call our scenes in a timely way.
Ah, okay. So a little behind the curtain information there about how you know what you're doing. So Edgar, we didn't get a chance to address this, but last time I said the night I was there, velvet became the word, and all of a sudden you're making dresses and all this kind of stuff is going on stage. I'm guessing that only works when velvet is your clue. Can
Or
you share some?
taffeta.
Yeah, what's that?
Or taffeta.
Yeah, or right. Oh, have you had
One of
that
the
one
two.
night? Was somebody afraid of taffeta?
Once.
Okay. Edgar, can you think of some of the goofy ones that, a word that people, because you got to go with what you get. So.
Oh man, we get escalators a lot. We get
Yes.
escalators a
Wait, what is
lot.
an escalator? Oh, escalator. Oh, escalator. The thing,
Escalator,
escalator.
yeah.
I thought that was an improv term.
No, we get escalator a lot. That's got to be like probably our number one. So if you ever hear us at the beginning say it and kind of burn it, that's because we probably got it so recently so much. I'm trying to think of what other fun ones we've gotten. I know we've gotten ice pick before. I think I was in that one.
Saturday we got ants in a sugar packet.
Yep,
Oh, yeah.
a sugar
Oh,
packet. Oh.
I'll tell you one of my favorite ones was we got one year a mirror at the end of a hallway. And
Oh.
that show was so fun. It ended up being like in a carnival, and there was a house of mirrors. And it ended with the it was a it was a there was a killer involved, and the hero was running through a house of mirrors. So they're in the middle of the stage, and the rest of the cast fanned out next to them, and everybody mirrored the main actor's like movements all the way down the line. And then the killer ran up to the booth and used the microphone to taunt the hero as they were running through this house of mirrors.
And that's all improv. That's all like coming up with it on the spot.
Yeah, that's what is accurate, yes, and that I think will get mixed up a lot of times in improv, in modern improv. But real yes and is not just agreeing with what anybody says, but it's about adding to it and agreeing with the circumstances. So if someone says, like, I want to go to a picnic, you don't have to say, yeah, and I'll bring a sandwich. You can also say, like, no, it's raining out. And now the scene is about maybe like agoraphobia or like, I don't want to do like someone who isn't seizing life or whatever. So in that scene, someone came out and they trusted that their teammates would help fill out that world and environment. And when you play together as long as all of these folks have, that becomes really fast and clean.
Well, I was going to ask you, well, I guess, Simon, I'll come to you with this, which is, well, twofold question. Number one, is there a Simon Tesper who, whatever role you need to be, it has to fit within, this is who I, Simon, this is who I am, this is what I'm comfortable, so I'm going to make this work with who I am? Or do you ever go, the heck with who Simon really is or what my personality is, I'm going to take this wherever I go? And then secondly, what if one of the performers is sort of new to the production, or somebody calls in sick and you got to grab somebody and there's an understudy? I mean, how will we in the audience, are we going to know it? Is the magic a little different that night?
Well, those are two really wonderful questions. I think, so for the first one about, if I understand correctly, it's about like how much of myself am I bringing to stage versus like total character commitment. And that is super different, I think, from performer to performer. I know like my style as a performer is, I think, much more close to self. I think I tend to play characters that are, I don't know how to describe it, but a little bit more winky towards the audience, like not enough to break the show, but enough to where I feel like my personality is shining through. There are some other, many other talented performers on the cast and just in the Chicago improv scene in general who are much more of the like straight actorly style. Bree is a great example of someone who is very good at committing to like a true character, not to denigrate what I do on stage, but Bree has great film acting skills and brings that skill to the stage very skillfully. I don't have great film acting skills, which is okay. We all bring different things. And then the second question was about like, if new people are added to the cast or if someone gets swapped out. Well, the full cast of Hitchcock Tales is relatively big. It's like, I don't know, Bruce, you know the exact number, like 25 people or something.
29, I think.
29 people. So we're on like a rotating schedule. Everyone roughly gets a show at least once a month. So that means the show is totally different every night. And yeah, there are some nights where people call off. We have less people on stage. We don't really have set understudies per se. Instead, it's more like if we're really desperate for someone, then there's a process where we'll email or text or call around to see if we can get someone to hop in. Otherwise, though, because it's an improv show, we have a lot of flexibility. Because this cast is so strong and it's full of people with such wonderful, strong personalities, the show is different depending on who's in the cast, but that's the fun. It's improvised not only in the sense of like the dialogue we're saying and what story we're telling, but also whoever happens to be in the cast that night is going to do a really unique show.
Yeah.
Just to go off of that question, I don't think like the magic is any different any night. And having done this show with such a variety of cast members, I think the cool thing about improv, especially in a form like this, is that it very much is kind of like a team sport. In the sense that, like, it doesn't even have to be like a new person on stage. I've had nights where I've felt like I've had an off night, but the show is usually always still fantastic. It's such a great ensemble and a great cast that you really don't need to be like, everyone doesn't have to be firing on all cylinders 100% of the time. We're so well taken care of amongst the cast. And I think whenever we do have, you know, the show you saw, we obviously had a student guest performer.
Is that not something you do all the time?
No, that was I think that was the first time we've done a student guest performer. And then a couple years back, we had a former member, E.J. Cameron, came up with us as a guest performer. Oh, and then the night before, we had another guest performer.
Lisa Burton.
Yeah, Lisa Burton. So we've had a couple of guest performers. And I think on nights when we have guest performers, or maybe it's someone's first Hitchcock show, we're maybe a little bit more like taking care of them and being like, let's try to let this person shine a lot. So almost to stay on the sports metaphor, we're trying to pass the ball to them a lot, to let them like score and let them look like a bigger star. I think like an example of this, and it's totally an idea that I stole from Bruce, that Bruce told me someone else had done before, on a cast member's first night in the show. This must've been like 2 years ago. I was in that show with them and I noticed that they like were kind of a smaller character, but the main villain still hadn't been like, we hadn't put a face to the main villain yet. And so I was like, hey, let's do a scene together, right by like a door that opens up. The lights go down. And then before the lights come up, I open the door And I turn to him and I say, shake my hand. And he goes to shake my hand, like I whisper that. And I hand him like a prop knife. And as soon as the lights go on, I'm like, oh, and I just named him the head villain. So I had him just kill me right at the top of
his. So you made that executive decision.
Yeah, because then I saw like the lights go up in his eyes, because now it's so cool to get to be like the main villain. And I'm like, yeah, you just killed like a henchman. Go wild. Have fun.
Your first show that you get a kill in is a very special show.
Yes. Yeah.
Sometimes people play for a little while before becoming any sort of a killer. And the first time you murder on stage, both literally and metaphorically, is very, very special. And something that I'm pretty passionate about as well, in a way that we take care of all of our performers as a company, is we always go around before a show and we do something called a consent check, which is, you know, we're up on that stage and we're doing some sort of daring things. We are portraying violence and romance. We can get quite physical. We can crawl all around each other or pick each other up. I've locked lips with most members of the cast. I've done something called baby birding, which is where we
pass. We know what it is.
That's a drink from one person to the next, because at a certain point in a drinking show, you got to get creative with the way that you're administering drinks.
We were so excited that COVID ended.
Bruce, that's exactly what was in my head. Just going, is there a COVID thing going on there?
No, we're fine. We're all vaccinated.
But this is the thing. We always check in with everybody beforehand. We see how everybody's doing health-wise. Nobody would ever play the show unhealthy. And then we see like, where is everybody's limit at for that night? Like, please don't pick me up tonight. I'm not going to be able to deal with that. And that's great. Boundaries are, they give us like a room within to play. Right. And so, you know, unfortunately, some of my cast members tell me, please don't baby bird me. And I respect that. But then others are all for it and we go for it. So it's just this idea of, we always know what everybody's up for, what's safe for everybody. And we can like really take care of everybody.
That could actually be a plot where somebody says, I have COVID, and then you baby bird and you're like, wait. And that's how they die.
Yeah.
And then we're like, it's 1955. What's COVID?
Right.
Oh yeah, COVID 35.
Hey Bruce, so since you have these moments of bringing people up, I'm guessing, see, my big fear, because you knew I was there, and so in my head I'm just going, okay, he knows I'm here at WGN, whatever. Do you pull, because at Titanic I was brought up to do the thing, really? During Titanic and whatever, which was great, but of course there's always risk in that. So I'm sort of curious, what kind of, is there a risk when you either select somebody from the audience? I would think they have to have some kind of experience. If there's a student, there's something there. But, and is ever a risk where you're going, oh, this was the wrong person to bring up?
There is, I think there's a fear in improv, going to see improv shows, about being picked on or being like brought up. And I think that is most people mixing up improvisation and stand-up. Like, stand-up does a lot of crowd work, especially these days. It's actually a criticism I've heard of stand-up these days. But there's a lot of, like, who's out in the audience, and I'm going to talk to them. We're creating a world. We're creating a movie, and we are trying to not break that fourth wall all that often. So it is pretty rare, I think, in an improv show, and especially in ours, that we are going to actually involve the audience out of the suggestion. We might make them the crowd of the cabaret where we have set our scene, but we're not going to ever put a microphone in someone's face and go, you do something funny now. Like, they're here for the audience. They're here to enjoy the show. The show that you saw was part of the Summer of Suspense. It was the weekend of guest stars. So Friday night, we had Lisa Burton from Devil's Daughter and a major performer here in Chicago come up. And then Saturday, we were like, anyone can be a guest star. That's the beauty of it. So we picked a student to come up. But like Edgar said, we've had Susan Messing, we've had Mick Napier, we've had people from all around the community join us in the show. But it is unique. In general, so
you might have picked me. Just if you knew me, you might have picked me and then taken the risk of it.
Oh, yeah. If you'd thrown in your name, we decided we wanted to reward students, because a lot of students see this show. I think that our show is especially unique, that there's not a lot of narrative shows, 12 years ago, this was very different. There was a lot, there was a fair number of them. But like Improvised Shakespeare, Jane Austen, there's a couple things over in Otherworld, and ours. And there's a lot of these are more montage, they're faster shows, there's different formats, which are beautiful and fun to see. But the narrative style of improv is something that I think is still unique in Chicago. And I think we are one of the oldest and best ones that do it.
Bruce, what, just one more follow-up to button that up a little bit. What do you, because like the night, yes, you took a student back there and he came on. It was kind of quiet at first. He sort of grew into the role. What are you doing with them back? Are you saying, just do this, just do this?
I happen to know that the, no, absolutely not. Because I think the more that we you tell someone what to do or you try to plan it out, the worse it'll go. Because like you think we know how it's going to go down and then the audience doesn't vibe with you, you get in your head and you're stuck. So I would never want to say, you come out and you do this and then I'll come in. I would rather just say, I want to do a scene with you and we're going to discover it out there. That's the joy of live theater. Literally, when they took him back in that brief moment before the show began, it was literally to do a consent check with him. Yeah. To say like, how are you feeling? And that's where we learned. He was like, I'm not a big drinker. And we're like, that's fine. I mean, bold on you to put your name into a bitch cocktails drinking show and not want to drink. But like, of course we can accommodate that. Yeah. But like, that was great. We're so glad we checked in with him. Cause if we hadn't done that, that guy would have been getting drinks all night and like having to like, he wouldn't have had as good a time.
And you're all about consent and respect. Can I, Edgar, I just want to ask you quickly, so I know you want to say something, but so there are certain bits, I'm sort of curious. I don't give things away when I can avoid it. Sure. I'm simply going to say you have a magic cigarette in the show that I saw. You can say what you want about it. But my question is that something that if I go see another version of Hitchcock with Edgar, I'm going to see that thing playing out? Or is it like, no, that just occurred to me that night.
I think that just occurred to me that night. It's something I've been, this is like a, as a performer personally in and around the city, I've been challenging myself more to do like more physical little gags and tricks here and there. It all started like, I think it was about a year ago exactly. Another improv team I'm on opened for Tim Meadows' improv team, and my parents were coming to that show. And I was like, my parents were from Mexico, so my dad in particular doesn't speak a whole lot of like English. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna try some like physical comedy bits. And pretty much since then, I've just fallen in a lot of love of like trying to do, for lack of a better word, like surpassing just language and just trying to do like fun bits that like I don't have to talk to. There could be a scene going on. You could know no English and just kind of enjoy like the dumb, fun things that are going on. So I always try to do something, whether it's like accidentally throwing something off the stage or like accidentally hurting myself or accident or like the magic cigarettes, accidentally lighting things on fire, or I think I've accidentally poisoned myself a couple of times now.
Oh, that's good.
So I do enjoy being like dumb and goofy, and doing like dumb, goofy, like, just physical gags here and there.
I'd love to get everybody to kind of chime in. You don't have to, but chime in. I'm pretty sure all of you have experienced both at Second City and Annoyance. I'm a huge fan of both. I'm not about to say who's better or whatever, but I'm sort of curious as to how you would pinpoint the kind of training and experience you had at Second City, then you come over to Annoyance. Is there, again, my partner has done both, so I kind of know my answer to that question, but is there a distinction? If somebody's out there watching us who says, I would love to do improv, would you say to them, here's a really good reason to go to Second City, here's a really good reason to come to Annoyance, or do one over the other? Simon, I'll just start with you. Sure. What is your thought?
Sure. So
you graduated from the conservatory at Second City.
That's true. Yes. Yeah, so I'm a graduate of the conservatory program. And I know Bree and Bruce both teach respectively at Second City and Annoyance. So they'll have great answers to this as well. I've been asked this by friends before. My things I say is like Second City classes are a little more expensive, and but their beginner improv program is like very gentle and good for true beginners of improv. If you've never done it before, you're super scared. I think like that's a more gentle program. Annoyance classes are like compared to Second City a little more affordable, and I know I got a lot out of them having had some improv experience prior going in. That's my pitch. In terms of what I prefer, I'm all about the Annoyance, baby. I love those classes. I love playing on the Annoyance stage. Second City's great too, of course. But yeah, if I had to pick one, I would say annoyance classes for me personally.
Unfortunately, you don't, because we're not pushing that. I'm a fan of both, but yeah, Bruce and Bree, let's come to you with those. Bree, I'll start with you. So you teach in both places, so who's Bree the teacher when you're at Second City versus Bree the teacher over at annoyance?
Yeah, well, actually, I only teach at Second City
okay.
at the moment, but I have taken classes at the annoyance, and I think for me, just also being somebody who came to Chicago basically because I started doing all this research on the development of improv within the U.S. and how strong of a foothold it had taken in Chicago, and realizing like these are the places to come and get the best of the best improv education that you could possibly get. It's just every place is going to have a little bit of a different flavor. And so I think Second City has been kind of more commercially recognized for such a long time. Their product, what they're putting up on their two main stages, is mostly a scripted sketch review. So a lot of what you learn there is going to be improv that could build towards writing scripted sketch review. And in the conservatory program, that's exactly what you do. You go through and you improvise until you've improvised enough to start getting some stuff down on the page. And then things are scripted and you put on a Second City style sketch review. And I think what happened is then we had IO that was like, well, we just want to do improv, which that's cool. And then the annoyance came in and the annoyance was like, we just want to do whatever we want all the time. So there are many shows that have been produced at the annoyance that I'm not going to say on this program. I'm not going to name the title because Julian would have to do too much work to bleep them out.
Ah, we don't want to give our producer work.
They're a very envelope pushing, irreverent style. And we love that because I think it goes so well with, we are both not necessarily all that risque of a show, but at the same time, you add that drinking game element and things can get a little wild sometimes. And I think that the annoyance, just style in general, is teaching you to like go big and have fun and like never worry about it being in any way over a line. Like the line does not exist in the world of the annoyance.
What an interesting, interesting distinction and stuff. And of course, I mean, Second City's known so long for as a tourism place to go. If you come to Chicago, you're immediately thinking Second City. You should be thinking of annoyance as well. Bruce, what's your thought about just the benefit of doing both or going both, or which would you do first?
Absolutely. I think that Bree really hit on to it, that like Second City has a long history of sketch comedy and creating sketches. Bree and I both understudy the ETC show that's on right now. I've understudied the last three main stages at Second City. So I've sort of seen how that like process and cast come together. And then I teach advanced improv at the Annoyance. And Second City casts and graduates really focus on improv that is really based in like who, what, where, why, and like setting up the setting, setting up an interesting idea, and figuring out how to re-improvise it over and over to create something really tight and scripted. And the Annoyance leaned into that improv set. And I think it's really about you as a unique and individual performer. I will say also, even though we're not talking about IO necessarily, but like, since Bree brought it up, IO, I always thought was the triumvirate, that they were talking about group mind and how to like create with an entire group, one word at a time, to create a scene. And the Annoyance believes in all of that. The Annoyance loves doing scripted sketch stuff, loves having a group mindset. But I think their training center is really also identified about their belief is the only way you can support a group, the only way you can create funny sketches, is to have a very important and clear point of view for yourself. The best way you can take care of other people is by taking care of yourself first. And that is the way, it's really just horse and cart, which one's coming first, and the Annoyance drives the individual performer first.
Fantastic. And Edgar, did Second City teach you how to light things on fire? And
yes.
thank you.
it's actually kind of funny because, so I only did, most of my training was either in New York or at Second City. Once I moved back to Chicago, so I never took classes at the Annoyance, but I tend to recommend the Annoyance a little bit more for improv, especially than Second City, for the same reasons that like Bree was touching on. Second City is really good at teaching you that improv to sketch format. So it kind of depends on what you're trying to do. If you're trying to get the improv to sketch format, they're really, I think Second City is like the place to go. And but it's also just kind of as a building, you hit on it a little bit, Paul, that it's a big tourism attraction and it's a big theater. So there's a little bit more polish on a lot of their productions and a little bit more like it's just a little bit more commercial per se. So it's almost like if I had the choice between Second City and The Annoyance, it's like Second City, I almost feel like that's where I go to like work, if that makes sense. Whereas The Annoyance is a little bit more of like a playground, if that helps differentiate them a little bit, which also means that like if you're looking for a couple more opportunities and like career opportunities, especially, I would probably point you towards like a Second City path, just because it tends to open a couple more doors sometimes. But The Annoyance for improv is like, it's such a playground and it's going to let you experiment so much, and you're probably going to discover things about yourself as a performer that you didn't know before. And it's really, it's just two different styles, I would say.
Yeah. For me, the distinction is the Fudge Pot is down the street from Second City and my picture's on the wall. So
love that place. I'm there every week, Paul.
Yeah. You know, they have frozen bananas, but you don't see them out.
Really?
Chocolate covered frozen bananas.
Okay. Just frozen bananas?
No, chocolate covered. But you have to eat them within like 15 minutes or they melt. So I always stop there to get stuff and say hi to my picture on the wall and before I go to a Second City show. And but I always want to just bring them home. And they went, now they're not going to last. But, you know, anyway.
Paul, can I say one more thing about Second
Please
City
do, real Bruce. Quick?
There's like I said, they do a lot of sketch over there, and it was always sort of thing where like their backgrounds is as an improv theater, and it's been an interesting time in the current like improv community landscape. And we produce a show over there, to throw out another pitch. We produce a show called Clued In, which is an improvised murder mystery in the style of Agatha Christie, and it's all this cast, and we perform over there Fridays and Saturdays at 7, and we produce with Second City very closely.
Then you run up to the audience.
And then we run over to the Annoyance Theater. Yeah. But we've been producing that show for like 9 years. So we're really in with the producers over there. And we've had a lot of conversations that I don't think are off the record just about wanting to build up Second City's cred as an improv theater again. And so we're doing all kinds of things over there. We're going to be producing, this is breaking news, Paul. I'm giving you a scoop, baby.
Let's take it.
In October, we are going to be moving our show, which is in Donnie Skybox, Fridays and Saturdays at 7. We are moving it to the Up Theater, which is their second largest theater at Second City, 230 people. We're going to be every Thursday in October and every Sunday at 4 p.m. in October. And a special Halloween show. And that's going to be our Clued-In show, which is runs an hour now. It's going to be a 90-minute show. We did this last year briefly as well. But we're going to be in the Up Theater in October doing a very special Clued-In murder mystery just for the month of October.
Oh, that's so fabulous. Well, congratulations. We have a little breaking news there. We'll have to promote that.
And we'll bring you in. We'll bring you back.
And we'll have to talk again when that happens. My thanks to all of you. It's such a lovely guy. I could go on for hours but you don't want to. So let me encourage people to go to theannoyancetheater.com, theannoyance.com to get tickets. Hitch Cocktails every Friday night. If you want to see something on Saturday night, well, then just go by August 30th, the end of August, where you can see The Summer of Suspense. It's just so much fun. It's so unique. It's so blended. I tell you, for me, yes, it's a different experience when I'm at Second City and you see the scriptedness, whatever, and it's fabulous and it's wonderful, and you come to The Annoyance and essentially you just don't know what's going to happen or what Edgar's going to light on fire. So
keep asking him not to.
Please. Yeah, I've lost so many things to the flame.
Very dangerous. But I thank you for your time. Continue to break legs every night. It's a great show. I'm so glad I was able to see it and encourage everybody to check it out. Thank you, everybody. And thanks for everybody listening and watching us here on Behind the Curtain after our little bonus chat. Be sure to see Hitch Cocktails, The Summer of Suspense, or just Hitch Cocktails at the Annoyance Theater. Thanks for watching.